Tudo. Não sei se vai de novo, não. Oh, okay. That's what I needed to do.
Rodney,
Thank you.
yes. I was just talking to Roger about maybe coming over and visiting, with Diane,
Now we're
even
live,
though.
y'all. Just we're live, so
Oh, we are.
that's all.
Okay. I'll
Yeah,
talk to you
after the
later.
meeting. Yeah, we'll talk about it later. Let's see if this is. This is going to be recording. I'm not going to worry about it. We're going to go on because this one, I think, is recording to the cloud. It is. All right, so we should have a transcript here. I think.
Oh.
Up there, there. I seem to be. Give me one second, y'all. Let me make sure we're live streaming to YouTube here, real quick. What? Get out of this. Stop. It's out there. Okay. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul. And tonight we're going to continue our study of the Urantia book, paper 184. We get closer and closer to the end, aren't we? And this is on page 1778 of the original book, or paper 184.01, and the rest of it. And this is when Jesus goes before the Sanhedrin. And it's also where Peter does his thing in the courtroom. So it should be interesting tonight. Hi, Letch. Rodney, buddy. All right. So let me change to. I do have both computers running again tonight. And I think I figured out a way to do this where my voice matches my picture using the phone.
Good.
So we're going to give this a try because I didn't get a recording on the last one. I had to get it from the restream. So. Let's try this way tonight and see how it works out. All right, paper 184 before the Sanhedrin court. Representatives of Annas had secretly instructed the captain of the Roman soldiers to bring Jesus immediately to the palace of Annas after he had been arrested. The former high priest desired to maintain his prestige as the chief ecclesiastical authority of the Jews. He also had another purpose in detaining Jesus at his house for several hours, and that was to allow time for legally calling together the court of the Sanhedrin. It was not lawful to convene the Sanhedrin court before the time of the offering of the morning sacrifice in the temple, and this sacrifice was offered about 3 o'clock in the morning. This is interesting.
Superstitious.
Superstition, that's right. And this is where Annas kept trying to keep control over everything, even though he was legally not the head of the Sanhedrin anymore. Okay, he had been retired. And so this is his way of keeping the power, to have him bring him to his house rather than straight before the court.
The
So
prestige.
prestige politics, right?
Power.
That's the way it always goes. All right, and this is a picture of the where Jesus went from the Mount of Olives to all the places he went during his paper. All right, Pam, would you take the next
Yeah. Anas knew that a court of San
one, please? Sanhedris, yeah.
Sanhedris was in waiting at the palace of his son-in-law, Caiaphas. Some 30 members of the Sanhedrin had gathered at the home of the high priest by midnight so that they would be ready to sit in judgment on Jesus when he might be brought before them. Only those members were assembled who were strongly and openly opposed to Jesus and his teaching, since it required only 23 to constitute a trial court.
Okay, now let me go back up. I need to mention something here. Caiaphas was the technical head of the Sanhedrin. Now, not Annas. Okay, that's what I wanted to make clear. Annas was the son-in-law of Annas, so he had become the leader of the Sanhedrin. So that's what we're talking about. All right. Okay. Yeah, are we on three? We are. Okay, Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yes. Jesus spent about 3 hours at the palace of Annas on Mount Olivet, not far from the Garden of Gethsemane, where they arrested him. John Zebedee was free and safe in the palace of Annas, not only because of the word of the Roman captain, but also because he and his brother James were well known to the older servants, having many times been guests at the palace, as the former high priest was a distant relative of their mother, Salome.
It's interesting how many people are related to each other in this story.
Yeah.
Right?
Small
Examination
world.
by Annas. Letch, would you take the next one?
One, examination by Annas. Annas, enriched by the temple revenues, his son-in-law, the acting high priest, and with his relations to the Roman authorities, was indeed the most powerful single individual in all Jewry. He was a suave and politic planner and plotter. He desired to direct the matter of disposing of Jesus. He feared to trust such an important undertaking wholly to his brusque and aggressive son-in-law. Annas wanted to make sure that the master's trial was kept in the hands of the Sadducees. He feared the possible sympathy of some of the Pharisees, seeing that practically all of those members of the Sanhedrin who had espoused the cause of Jesus were Pharisees.
Back to the political stuff again, right?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be in charge. Okay. Gary, would you take the next one? Here, there we go.
Okay. Annas had not seen Jesus for several years, but since the time when the master called at his house and immediately left upon observing his coldness and reserve in receiving him, Annas had thought to presume on his early acquaintance and thereby attempt to persuade Jesus to abandon his claims and leave Palestine. He was reluctant to participate in the murder of a good man and had reasoned that Jesus might choose to leave the country rather than to suffer death. But when
Annas.
Annas, okay, stood before the stalwart and determined Galilean, he knew at once that it would be useless to make such proposals. Jesus was even more majestic and well poised than Annas remembered him.
So he knew him before, and he dealt with him as a young man, or when he was younger. So.
Yeah, he had escorted him around the college, the academies.
Yeah, he did. So, that's the beginning of the story of Jesus, right?
Yeah, that's
And
wasn't he the one that was giving him, are you referring to the one where he was invited to study to become a rabbi?
yeah.
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 In his early days.
In his early days. Okay. When Jesus was young, Annas had taken a great interest in him, but now his revenues were threatened by what Jesus so re recently had done in driving the money changers and other commercial traders out of the temple. This act had aroused the enmity of the former high priest far more than had Jesus's teachings.
Yeah, it threatened his pocketbook.
Threatened his pocketbook. That's right. That's
Course.
it's the money every time, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, look at it. So that's interesting. I see everybody's picture on my other screen over here, except myself. And it's coming in through the live stream, so it's fine. Okay. Baby, would you take the
Annas entered his spacious audience chamber, seated himself in a large chair, and commanded that Jesus be brought before him. After a few moments spent in silently surveying the master, he said, "You realize that something must be done about your teaching, since you are disturbing the peace and order of our country." As Annas looked inquiringly at Jesus, the master looked full into his eyes, but made no reply. Again, Annas spoke, "What are the names of your disciples besides Simon Zealots, the agitator?" Again, Jesus looked down upon him, but he did not answer.
He wasn't going to volunteer any information, was he? She can't blame him for doing
He
that.
was in control.
He was in control. Rodney, would you take the next?
Yes, Annas was considerably disturbed by Jesus' refusal to answer his questions, so much so that he said to him, "Do you have no care as to whether I am friendly to you or not? Do you have no regard for the power I have in determining the issues of your coming trial?" When Jesus heard this, he said, "Annas, you know that you could have no power over me unless it were permitted by my Father. Some would destroy the Son of Man because they are ignorant. They know no better. But you, friend, know what you are doing. How can you, therefore, reject the light of God?"
That's about as direct as you can be, isn't it? Letch, would you take the next?
The candid manner in which Jesus spoke to Annas almost bewildered him, but he had already determined in his mind that Jesus must either leave Palestine or die. So he summoned up his courage and asked, "Just what is it you are trying to teach the people? What do you claim to be?" Jesus answered, "You know full well that I have spoken openly to the world. I have taught in the synagogue and many times in the temple, where all the Jews and many of the Gentiles have heard me. In secret, I have spoken nothing. Why then do you ask me about my teaching? Why do you not summon those who have heard me and inquire of them? Behold, all Jerusalem has heard that which I have spoken, even if you have not yourself heard these teachings." But before Annas could make reply, the chief steward of the palace, who was standing near, struck Jesus in the face with his hand, saying, "How dare you answer the high priest with such words?" Annas spoke no words of rebuke to the steward, but Jesus addressed him, saying, "My friend, if I have spoken evil, bear witness against the evil. But if I have spoken the truth, why then should you smile me? Smite me."
Smite me. Wish he were just smiling at him, right? So he hit him, right? All right. Gary, did you take?
Although Annas regretted that his steward had struck Jesus, he was too proud to take notice of the matter. In his confusion, he went into another room, leaving Jesus alone with the household attendants and the temple guards for almost an hour.
So I left him alone. That's when they could
I wonder if they
abuse him.
beat the crap out of him while he was away.
Not
Pretty
yet.
much. Yeah. They ridiculed him, hit him, sort of thing. All right. When he returned, going up to the master size, he said, "Do you claim to be the Messiah, the deliverer of Israel?" Jesus said, "Annas, you have known me from the times of my youth. You know that I claim to be nothing except that which my Father has appointed, and that I have been sent to all men, Gentile as well as Jew." Then said Annas, I have been told that you have claimed to be the Messiah. Is that true? Jesus looked upon Annas, but only replied, "You have said."
So you've said.
So you have said. That's right. All right, Pam.
About this time, messengers arrived from the palace of Caiaphas to inquire what time Jesus would be brought before the court of the Sanhedrin. And since it was nearing the break of day, Annas thought best to send Jesus bound and in the custody of the temple guards to Caiaphas. He himself followed after them shortly.
So he wouldn't join the procession. He waited till they left, and then he went on his own over there to the court. All right, Rodney, would you take the next one?
Two, Peter in the courtyard. As the band of guards and soldiers approached the entrance to the palace of Annas, John Zebedee was marching by the side of the captain of the Roman soldiers. Judas had dropped some distance behind, and Simon Peter followed afar off. After John had entered the palace courtyard with Jesus and the guards, Judas came up to the gate, but seeing Jesus and John, went on over to the home of Caiaphas, where he knew the real trial of the master would later take place. Soon after Judas had left, Simon Peter arrived, and as he stood before the gate, John saw him just as they were about to take Jesus into the palace. The portress who kept the gate knew John, and when he spoke to her, requesting that she let Peter in, she gladly assented.
So he had already asked that they let Peter in, right? So they knew who he was. Letch, would you take the next one?
Peter, upon entering the courtyard, went over to the charcoal fire and sought to warm himself, for the night was chilly. He felt very much out of place here among the enemies of Jesus, and indeed he was out of place. The master had not instructed him to keep near at hand as he had admonished John. Peter belonged with the other apostles, who had been specifically warned not to endanger their lives during these times of the trial and crucifixion of their master.
So he went against what Jesus told him, didn't he? Jesus knew exactly what was going to happen. Gary, would you take the next message?
Peter threw away his sword shortly before he came up to the palace gates so that he entered the courtyard of Annas unarmed. His mind was in a whirl of confusion. He could scarcely realize that Jesus had been arrested. He could not grasp the reality of the situation, that he was here in the courtyard of Annas, warming himself beside the servants of the high priest. He wondered what the other apostles were doing, and in turning over in his mind as how John came to be admitted to the palace, concluded that it was because he was known to the servants, since he had bidden the gatekeeper admit him.
See how this tangled web unfolds, can't we? Shortly after the portress let Peter in, and while he was warming himself by the fire, she went over to him and mischievously said, "Are you not one of this man's disciples?" Now Peter should not have been surprised at this recognition, for it was John who requested that the girl let him pass through the palace gates, but he was in such a tense, nervous state that his identification as a disciple threw him off his balance, and with only one thought uppermost in his mind, the thought of escaping with his life, he promptly answered the maiden's question by saying, "I am not." That's the first denial, right? Pam.
Very soon, another servant came up to Peter and asked, "Did I not see you in the garden when they arrested this fellow? Are you not Also, one of his followers, Peter, was now thoroughly alarmed. He saw no way of safely escaping from these accusers, so he vehemently denied all connection with Jesus, saying, "I know not this man, neither am I one of his followers."
Second denial, right?
Oh, it must have killed him.
Yeah, I mean, this must have been awful and everything. He's just like, all right, Rodney.
About this time, the portress at the gate drew Peter to one side and said, "I am sure you are a disciple of this Jesus, not only because one of his followers bade me let you in the courtyard, but my sister here has seen you in the temple with this man. Why do you deny this?" When Peter heard the maid accuse him, he denied all knowledge of Jesus with much cursing and swearing, again saying, "I am not this man's follower. I do not even know him. I never heard of him before."
Another denial, right? All
They left the
right.
cursing out.
Yeah, the cursing too. Letch, would you take the next?
Yeah. Peter left the fireside for a time while he walked about the courtyard. He would have liked to have escaped, but he feared to attract attention to himself. Getting cold, he returned to the fireside, and one of the men standing near him said, "Surely you are one of this man's disciples. This Jesus is a Galilean, and your speech betrays you, for you also speak as a Galilean." And again, Peter denied all connection with his master.
Fourth time there, wasn't
Right.
Fourth denial. Scary. You can take the next.
Peter was so perturbed that he sought to escape contact with his accusers by going away from the fire and remaining by himself on the porch. After more than an hour of this isolation, the gatekeeper and her sister chanced to meet him, and both of them again teasingly charged him with being a follower of Jesus, and again he denied the accusation, just as he was once more denied all connection with Jesus. The cook crowed, the
Cock
cock,
road.
thank you, the cock crowed, and Peter remembered the words of warning spoken to him by the master earlier that same night, as he stood before. As he stood there, heavy of heart and crushed with the sense of guilt, the palace doors opened, and the guard led Jesus past on the way to Calipus.
Caiaphas,
Calipus.
Caiaphas.
As the master passed Peter, he saw by the light of the torches the look of despair on the face of his former self-confident and superficially brave apostle, and he turned and looked upon Peter. Peter never forgot that look as long as he lived. It was such a glance of
Commingled.
commingled pity and love as mortal man has never beheld in the face of the master.
So we counted them. That's five, but five times he refused to admit that he was an apostle. Did y'all catch that?
Yeah, I thought it was only three, but
No. See, that's the Bible version of it, right? It was
okay.
five times Peter denied being a disciple of the master. Five times. All right. Okay, here we go. After Jesus and the guards passed out of the palace gates, Peter followed them, but only for a short distance. He could not go farther. He sat down by the side of the road and wept bitterly. When he had shed these tears of agony, he turned a step back towards the camp, hoping to find his brother Andrew. On arriving at the camp, he found only David Zebedee, who sent a messenger to direct him to where his brother had gone to hide in Jerusalem. talk about dejected. He must have felt that.
Yeah.
Pam, would you take the next one?
Peter's entire experience occurred in the courtyard of the palace of Annas on Mount Olivet. He did not follow Jesus to the palace of the high priest, Caiaphas. That Peter was brought to the realization that he had repeatedly denied his master by the crowing of a cock indicates that this all occurred outside of Jerusalem, since it was against the law to keep poultry within the city proper.
I guess they didn't have any eggs there, did they? All right. Rodney, would you take the next one?
Until the crowing of the cock brought Peter to his better senses, he had only thought, as he walked up and down the porch to keep warm, how cleverly he had eluded the accusations of the servants, and how he had frustrated their purpose to identify him with Jesus. For the time being, he had only considered that these servants had no moral or legal right thus to question him, and he really congratulated himself over the manner in which he thought he had avoided being identified and possibly subjected to arrest and imprisonment. Not until the cock crowed did it occur to Peter that he had denied his master. Not until Jesus looked upon him did he realize that he had failed to live up to his privileges as an ambassador of the kingdom.
Wonder how many times we individually do the same thing. Just fail to lead. We fail to keep up with our obligations as ambassadors, right? Letch, would you take the next?
Yes. Having taken the first step along the path of compromise and least resistance, there was nothing apparent to Peter but to go on with the course of conduct decided upon. It requires a great and noble character, having started out wrong, to turn about and go right. All too often, one's own mind tends to justify continuance in the path of error when once it is entered upon.
So are they saying Peter didn't have a great and noble character?
Well, no, they're saying that it took great character by Peter to turn about and start admitting he was a disciple
Okay.
again, an
And
apostle.
keep moving.
Yeah, keep moving. All right. Gary, you get the really long one.
Thanks. Okay. Peter never fully believed that he could be forgiven until he met his master after the resurrection. After the resurrection, and saw that he was received just as before the experience of his tragic night of the denials.
So he was fully forgiven. Three, before the court of the Sanhedrin. It was about 3:30 this Friday morning when the chief priest Caiaphas called the Sanhedrin Court of Inquiry to order and asked that Jesus be brought before them for his formal trial. On three previous occasions, the Sanhedrin, by a large majority vote, had decreed the death of Jesus, had decided that he was worthy of death on informal charges of law-breaking, blasphemy, and flouting the traditions of the fathers of Israel. And all these things carry a death penalty. Pam.
This was not a regularly called meeting of the Sanhedrin and was not held in the usual place, the chamber of hewn stone in the temple. This was a special trial court of some 30 Sanhedrists and was convened in the palace of the high priest. John Zebedee was present with Jesus throughout this so-called trial.
That he witnessed everything, right?
Yeah.
Right. Now, Rodney, please.
How these chief priests, scribes, Sadducees, and some of the Pharisees flattered themselves that Jesus, the disturber of their position and the challenger of their authority, was now securely in their hands, and they were resolved that he should never live to escape their vengeful clutches.
Tell you what, these are supposed to be religious men. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Ledge, would you go next?
Yeah. Now, ordinarily, the Jews, when trying a man on a capital charge, proceeded with great caution and provided every safeguard of fairness in the selection of witnesses and the entire conduct of the trial. But on this occasion, Caiaphas was more of a prosecutor than an unbiased judge.
So he wasn't acting as a judge at all, just a prosecutor. He's already made up his mind. Gary, would you take the next?
Jesus appeared before this court, clothed in his usual garments and with his hands bound together behind his back. The entire court was startled and somewhat confused by this majestic appearance. Never had they gazed upon such a prisoner nor witnessed such composure in a man on trial for his life.
He was always of the state of being who he was. What the Jewish
Yes.
law required that at least two witnesses must agree upon any point before a charge could be laid against the prisoner. Judas could not be used as a witness against Jesus because the Jewish law specifically forbade the testimony of a traitor, which he was. More than a score of false witnesses were on hand to testify against Jesus, but their testimony was so contradictory and so evidently trumped up that the Sanhedrin themselves were very much ashamed of their performance. Jesus stood there looking down benignly upon these perjurers, and this very countenance disconcerted the lying witnesses. Throughout all of this false testimony, the master never said a word. He made no reply to their many false accusations. Could you imagine standing for the creator of the universe lying like that? I just can't conceive that.
The
Tim,
first
take it.
time any two of their witnesses approached, even the sentence semblance of an agreement was when two men testified that they had heard Jesus say in the course of one of his temple discourses that he would destroy the temple made with hands and in 3 days make another temple without hands. That was not exactly what Jesus said, regardless of the fact that he pointed to his own body when he made the remark referred to.
He was referring to raising from the dead, but
Yeah.
Rodney, you take the lead.
Although the high priest shouted at Jesus, "Do you not answer any of these charges?" Jesus opened not his mouth. He stood there in silence while all of these false witnesses gave their testimony. Hatred, fanaticism, and unscrupulous exaggeration so characterized the words of these perjurers that their testimony fell in its own entanglements. The very best refutation of their false accusations was the master's calm and majestic silence.
So he didn't have to answer him, did he? They all made fools of themselves. Let's. Would you take the next one, please?
Shortly after the beginning of the testimony of the false witnesses, Annas arrived and took his seat beside Caiaphas. Annas now arose and argued that this threat of Jesus to destroy the temple was sufficient to warrant three charges against him. Number one, that he was a dangerous traducer of the people, that he taught them impossible things and otherwise deceived them. Two, that he was a fanatical revolutionist in that he advocated laying violent hands on the sacred temple, else how could he destroy it? Number three, that he taught magic inasmuch as he promised to build a new temple, and that without hands.
They missed his meaning completely, didn't they?
Yeah.
McGarry, did you take the notes?
already had the full Sanhedrin agreed that Jesus was guilty of death-deserving transgressions of the Jewish laws. But they were now more concerned with developing charges regarding his conduct and teachings, which could justify Pilate in pronouncing the death sentence upon their prisoner. They knew that they must secure the consent of the Roman governor before Jesus could legally be put to death. And Annas was minded to proceed along the lines of making it appear that Jesus was a dangerous teacher to be abroad among the people.
All right, so they tried to change it around a little bit to make sure that it sounded bad enough for the Romans. All right.
Well, they had to make it come out of the religious things for the Jews and make it a threat to the Romans to motivate the Romans to do something, because the Romans didn't really care that much about the Jews.
That's right. But Caiaphas could no longer endure the sight of the master standing there in perfect composure and unbroken silence. He thought he knew at least one way in which the prisoner might be induced to speak. Accordingly, he rushed over to the side of Jesus, shaking an accusing finger at the master's face, said, "I adjure you in the name of the living God that you tell us whether you are the deliverer, the Son of God." Jesus answered, "Caiaphas, I am. Soon I will go to the Father, and presently shall the Son of Man be clothed with power and once more reign over the hosts of heaven." So he admitted exactly who he was right then and there, right? All right. Now, would you take a share?
When the high priest heard Jesus utter these words, he was exceedingly angry, and rending his outer garments, he exclaimed, "What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now have you all heard this man's blasphemy. What do you now think should be done with this lawbreaker and blasphemer?" And they all answered in unison, "He is worthy of death. Let him be crucified."
I sure wish all these guys were awake when they went to judge, you know, so they could see what they.
What do you mean,
Right.
awake? What do you mean by
yeah, awake? You know, when we're judged, we're not conscious of them, are we? Our angels go to justify our life, and if we're judged non-competent, non-salvageable, we're not conscious. We don't hear it ourselves. We don't
but
ever wake back up of death. So
would you
that's
think
what I'm saying. You would think they'd make an exception with these guys, right?
No, I think they got into heaven.
Huh?
I think they got into heaven.
You think they got into heaven? I don't.
Yes, I do.
I don't, personally.
Because I tell you what.
I don't think you could. I don't think you could stand against the Son, and stand against the Creator
Well, they
of the
were
local
ignorant.
Union. Yeah,
They
hard to say. Hard to say. But
isn't the
personally, I would.
requirement? Isn't
I'm pretty forgiving, and if I was Jesus, I would let him.
Oh, see, that's why you're not Jesus. But
that's right.
you know, here's my logic. Okay.
Yeah.
The gates to heaven is based on the belief in a single God, number one.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And not have evil intent. They
Yeah.
may get messed up there, but they do have the belief in a single God.
They believe more in their laws than they did God. That's what I'm saying. They
So
made
what you're
exceptions. What I'm saying is they did not really have true belief in God the Father.
okay, then
That's
you
what
they,
Jesus kept telling me.
their God was the process.
That's right. Their God was the process. And the process gave them their power and their money. Right. Okay, let's go on. Who's
Sounds
up
like a
next?
politician.
I think it's my turn.
I think it is too, yeah.
Jesus manifested no interest in any question asked him when before Annas or the Sanhedrin, except one question relative to his pastoral mission. When asked if he were the Son of God, he instantly and unequivocally answered in the affirmative.
You know, and this brings us back to the question that we should know about the bestowal mission, right? And we should know about all the bestowal missions, all other six of them too. So this stuff is very important. That's why this book is so important to us, right? All right, Letch, would you take the next?
Annas desired that the trial proceed further and that charges of a definite nature regarding Jesus's relation to the Roman law and Roman institutions be formulated for subsequent presentation to Pilate. The counselors were anxious to carry these matters to a speedy termination, not only because it was a preparation day for the Passover, and no secular work should be done after noon, but also because they feared Pilate might at any time return to the Roman capital of Judea, Caesarea, since he was in Jerusalem only for the Passover celebration.
So they were stuck on time, weren't they?
No.
Mm-hmm. Gary, would you take the next one?
But Annas did not succeed in keeping control of the court after Jesus had so unexpectedly answered Caiaphas. The high priest stepped forward and smote him in the face with his hand. Annas was truly shocked as the other members of the court in passing out of the room spit in Jesus's face, and many of them mockingly slapped him with the palms of their hands. And thus, in disorder and in such unheard of confusion, this first session of the Sanhedrin's trial of Jesus ended at 4:30. That's a.m., I'm assuming.
4:30.
Yeah, in the morning. In the morning. 30 prejudice and tradition blind false judges and their false witnesses are all presumed to sit in judgment on the righteous creator of the universe. And these impassioned accusers are exacerbated by the majestic silence and the superb bearing of this God-man. His silence is terrible to endure. His speech is fearlessly defiant. He is unmoved by their threats and undaunted by their assaults. Man sits in judgment of God, but even then he loved them and would save them if he could. Better man than lightning. That's what I can say. All right. Kim, would you take the next one?
For the hour of humiliation, the Jewish law required that in the matter of passing the death sentence, there should be two sessions of the court. The second session was to be held on the day following the first, and the intervening time was to be spent in fasting and mourning by the members of the court. But these men could not await the next day for the confirmation of their decision that Jesus must die. They waited only 1 hour. In the meantime, Jesus was left in the audience chamber in the custody of temple guards who, with the servants of high priest, amused themselves by heaping every sort of indignity upon the Son of Man. They mocked him, spit upon him, and cruelly buffeted him. They would strike him in the face with a rod and then say, "Prophecy to us,
prophesy.
You, to us, you, the deliverer, who it was that struck you." And thus they went on for one full hour, reviling and mistreating the unresisting man of Galilee.
Here's the picture of this going on. All right. Robbie,
during this tragic hour of suffering and mock trials, before the ignorant and unfeeling guards and servants, John Zebedee waited in lonely terror in an adjoining room. When these abuses first started, Jesus indicated to John by a nod of his head that he should retire. The master well knew that if he permitted his apostle to remain in the room to witness these indignities, John's resentment would be so aroused as to produce such an outbreak of protesting indignation as would probably result in his death.
Throughout this awful hour, Jesus uttered no word. To this gentle and sensitive soul of humankind, joined in personality, relationship with the God of all this universe, there was no more bitter portion of his cup of humiliation than this terrible hour at the mercy of these ignorant and cruel guards and servants who had been stimulated to abuse him by the example of the members of this so-called Sanhedrin's court.
Animals.
Yeah, they were animals. Sure, Christ, they can call up. Gary.
The human heart cannot possibly conceive of the shudder of indignation.
Yeah, shudder of indignation. Yeah.
Of indignation that swept over a vast universe as the celestial intelligence witnessed this sight of their beloved sovereign submitting himself to the will of his ignorant and misguided creatures on the sin-darkened sphere of unfortunate Urantia.
It's surprising they didn't come down and just wipe everyone out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. This is this trait of the animal in man, which leads him to want to insult and physically assault that which he cannot spiritually attain or intellectually achieve. Human beings are doing this even today. Just look at YouTube any day. In the half-civilized man, there are still lurks an evil brutality which seeks to vent itself upon those who are superior in wisdom and spiritual attainment. Witness the evil coarseness and the brutal ferocity of these supposedly civilized men as they derive a certain form of animal pleasure from this physical attack on the unresisting Son of Man. As these insults, taunts, and blows fell upon Jesus, he was undefending but not defenseless. Jesus was not vanquished, merely uncontending with the material sense. In other words, he allowed this to happen because of his position and who he was. Right? Pam, you know, would you take the next one?
These are the moments of the Master's greatest victories in all his long and eventful career as maker, upholder, and savior of a vast and far-flung universe, having lived to the full a life of revealing God to man. Jesus is now engaged in making a new and unprecedented revelation of man to God. Jesus is now revealing to the world the final triumph over all fears of creature personality isolation. The Son of Man has finally achieved the realization of identity as the Son of God. Jesus does not hesitate to assert that he and the Father are one. And on the basis of the fact and truth of that supreme and supernal experience, he admonishes every kingdom believer to become one with him, even as he and his Father are one. The living experience in the religion of Jesus thus becomes the sure and certain technique whereby the spiritually isolated and Cosmically lonely mortals of Earth are unable to escape personality isolation with all its consequences of fear and associated personality isolation with all its consequences of fear and associated feelings of helplessness. In the fraternal realities of the kingdom of heaven, the faith sons of God find final deliverance from the isolation of the self, both personal and planetary. The God-knowing believer increasingly experiences the ecstasy and grandeur of spiritual socialization on the universe scale, citizenship on high in association with the eternal realization of the divine destiny of perfection attainment.
So, and what it's telling us is this: rebellion creates isolation and loneliness. And by isolating yourself, you isolate yourself from the universe. And that's why they call it cosmic insanity, because you have no association with any other being in the whole universe. And that's what rebellion does to you. Okay. Rodney.
Five, the second meeting of the court at 5:30 o'clock. The court reassembled, and Jesus was led into the adjoining room where John was waiting. Here, the Roman soldier and the temple guards watched over Jesus while the court began the formulation of the charges which were to be presented to Pilate. Annas made it clear to his associates that the charge of blasphemy would carry no weight with Pilate. Judas was present during the second meeting of the court, but he gave no testimony. It's
You
interesting,
imagine that?
my mother told me that when she was a young kid, 80 years ago, that that's how they talk about time. They used phrases like that. 5:30 o'clock.
5:30 o'clock. Actually, I remember that as a kid. The older people would use those terms. Let's, would you let you get another one with three things in it? So.
This session of the court lasted only a half hour, and when they adjourned to go before Pilate, they had drawn up the indictment of Jesus as being worthy of death under three heads. Number one, that he was a perverter of the Jewish nation. He deceived the people and incited them to rebellion. Two, that he taught the people to refuse to pay tribute to Caesar. Three, that by claiming to be a king and the founder of a new sort of kingdom, he incited treason against the emperor. Oh,
We know
incredible.
all of these are false, right? Not a single
Right.
one of them is true. Gary, would you take the lead?
This entire procedure was irregular and wholly contrary to the Jewish laws. No two witnesses had agreed on any matter except those who testified regarding Jesus' statement about destroying the temple and raising it again in 3 days. And even concerning that point, no witness spoke for the defense, and neither was Jesus asked to explain his intended meeting.
So the whole thing was just a farce. Well, all right.
No.
The only point that the court could have consistently judged him on was that of blasphemy, and that would have rested entirely on his own testimony. Even concerning blasphemy, they failed to cast a formal ballot for the death sentence. So they couldn't even agree. Yeah. Would you take that?
Yeah. Well, now they presumed to formulate three charges with which to go before Pilate, on which no witnesses had been heard, and which were agreed upon while the accused prisoner was absent. When this was done, three of the Pharisees took their leave. They wanted to see Jesus destroyed, but they would not formulate charges against him without witnesses and in his absence.
Pharisees. Three of the Pharisees said, "We're not going to do this." No.
Right.
Rodney.
Jesus did not again appear before the Sanhedrin's court. They did not want again to look upon his face as they sat in judgment upon his innocent life. Jesus did not know, as a man, other formal charges until he heard them recited by Pilate.
So he didn't even know what the charges are until he got before Pilate.
Yeah.
Les, would you take the next seat?
While Jesus was in the room with John and the guards, and while the court was in its second session, some of the women about the high priest's palace, together with their friends, came to look upon the strange prisoner, and one of them asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of God?" And Jesus answered, "If I tell you, you will not believe me, and if I ask you, you will not answer."
Interesting.
Strange answer.
Anyone?
Honest one, no.
Yeah, Gary.
At 6 o'clock that morning, Jesus was led forth from the home of Caiaphas to appear before Pilate for confirmation of the sentence of death, which this Sanhedrin court had so unjustly and irregularly decreed.
So the next part is the trial before Pilate itself, right? Stop the share.
I wonder if Pilate
Share.
ever got his hands cleaned after he pronounced judgment.
Probably not, right? Wouldn't that get right? Okay. Pete, who's up?
Gary?
Gary,
Okay.
would you do a prayer for me?
Yep. Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I became a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebadon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, amen.
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 Okay, let me stop the share. And thanks everyone for coming tonight. Because it's Thursday, we'll start again on Tuesday.
Thank you,
This
Roger.
Thursday is, yeah, my day's already together lately.
If
Thanks all
anyone.
those out there at Video Land that watch our videos. We thank you for watching too. And come see us Tuesday, and we'll start to wrap up this trial. Sure.
If you want to stop the recording, I think Pamela was
Okay.
saying something.
Yeah, let me do that. Stop the live stream too.